shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The talk of the town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Daytime turns me off and I don't need maybe. 9 to 5 ain't it taking me where I'm bound. When it's done, I run out to see my baby.
Ro, what night is it? Is it Friday night or Saturday night?
I think it's Friday.
Yeah, we got a special Friday night version of the Nocturnal Journal. Thanks for joining us. 2 hours. In the next hour, we're going to talk about White Sox parks. Amazing vendors. I bet you guys are all White Sox fans.
You bet.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the history of the old Comiskey vendors a lot. We're going to talk about Go RVing and small houses, tiny houses. In the studio for the first segment, and thank you all you guys for coming down tonight. We're going to pay tribute. I only met her a couple times when I did a story on her, but Wanda Kurek, the proprietor of Stanley's, 43rd and Ashland in Back of the Yards. And she passed away June 18th, right, at age 95. So we want to talk about the history of the tavern. In the studio, we have, why don't you guys just introduce yourself, and we'll start with the Back of the Yards and go specific. But
hi.
Dominic?
I'm Dominic Pasiga, from Emeritus Professor at Columbia College.
And you wrote, which we'll reference here, Slaughterhouse,
right.
Chicago Union Stockyard and the World It Made. Mm-hmm. University of Chicago Press?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Walter?
I'm Walt Kurek, and I'm proud to say that I'm Wanda's nephew.
Okay.
My name is Ken Motti. They jokingly refer to me as the mayor of rockabilly in the music scene in Chicago, and I was lucky enough to be introduced to Stanley's Bar by the young man sitting next to me.
And I'm Steve Mandel, a fan of all things old about Chicago. And
that's why you're on this show. This is your second visit to see
yes.
us. We talked about the Buck of the Sun. So let's just talk about, like I said in the general, let's talk about the history of the Union Stockyard, Dominic, and you know, the ebbs and flows, how it started, how it wound down when Wanda was there. I want to tell the listeners how important it was and how, you know, Wanda's Bar played into it.
Sure. The Union Stockyard opened on Christmas Day, 1865. What better way to celebrate Christ's birthday but to open a livestock market? And it lasted till the first non-market day was August 1st, 1971. So almost 106 years. And it started almost immediately as a tourist attraction and as a center of the meat and packing industry. Most of the packers had been located in Bridgeport along the south branch of the river, but by 1870-75, they began to move in west of the stockyards. And as they moved in west of the stockyards, they filled in the area up to Ashland Avenue. So it was the square mile that people talked about. Tom Wilson, who owned Wilson Meatpacking, who I understand was a customer at Stanley's periodically, he would refer to the square mile almost in a loving kind of way.
Yeah.
He made his fortune there. He ran Nelson Morris Company, and then he owned Wilson Meatpacking. It peaked at World War One. There were about 50,000 people working in the stockyards at the time. And then in the 1920s, it slowly went into decline in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. It peaked again during World War II, but after World War II, you could see a precipitous decline. From 1893 to 1933, there were never fewer than 13 million head of livestock a year in the stockyards. Twice it peaked at over 18 million. So the Tribune called it organized chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you didn't know where you were going, you got lost in the pens real easily.
Yeah.
After the war, the truck and the interstate system
sure.
began to have an impact, and the packers began to buy more and more direct from farmers, and so the stockyards went into decline. So I worked there from 1969 to 1971. And at that point, even that last year, I believe we had 750,000 head of livestock.
What'd you do there?
I was a livestock handler mm-hmm. and then later a security guard.
A security guard?
Yeah.
My dad worked there. He began his career at Swift & Company there, and he was like a messenger boy. This had to be like in the 30s. And mm-hmm. But anyway, you always talked about how it was a city within a city.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
They had a radio station. And
oh, yeah.
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 Did they have a newspaper? And,
they had the Drover's Journal.
Yeah.
Drover's Journal was published there. They had restaurants. They had a hotel, of course, the Stockyard Inn.
Yeah, right.
Before that, known as the Transit House. WGN broadcast the farm report at noon mm-hmm. from the auditorium of the Livestock Exchange building. We had, at one point, there were 100 security guards for the stockyards. The livestock market itself, not counting the packing houses, covered 475 acres. You had a hog house at one point could hold over 200,000 hogs, a sheep house that could hold 100,000 sheep, and the cattle pens just seemed to go on forever.
Built in a kind of a swamp. I mean, everybody talks about, we talked about this with Wanda once, and my dad used to talk about just the smell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll describe the smell.
Oh, well, the smell. You know, I grew up with the smell. I grew up at 46th and Wood Street, it didn't mean anything to me. It was the way everything smelled. But one time when I was an altar boy at Sacred Heart Parish, where Wanda was a parishioner as well, and they took us out to a seminary someplace and out in the country. And I said, what is that smell? It's terrible. What is that smell? It was fresh air. And I got sick.
So Walter, talk a little bit about the history of the bar. I mean, it goes back. The first location was like 1924.
Yeah. My grandfather was the classic American immigrant. I think the story of Wanda and the saloon is pretty much the American story. He worked in the stockyards in Chicago. Actually, was a foreman. He started his first location in 1924. Located approximately 41st and Ashland in a rented location. And basically it was beer and alcohol, and food was really given away as an inducement for customers to come in and stop by. And then as years gone by, the food became a bigger component of the business. But basically my grandfather and my grandmother started with nothing, rented a location, then a second location on 1615 West 43rd Street, right on the alley. That's still a saloon today. Then they moved to 43rd in Ashland on the south side of the street, which is now a Dunkin' Donuts. They saved their money and purchased the corner property on 43rd in Ashland on the northwest corner, mm-hmm. and moved into that location in 1935. And it was always a family business. Everyone in the family worked in the business. My father was a lawyer, but he tended bar. My aunts tended bar. My uncle tended bar. I tended bar when I was in college, and just a family business.
How did you see the neighborhood change? I don't know how old are you?
I am 64 years old.
64 years old. So how did you see, when you go there to work, how did you see the neighborhood?
Well, my recollection of the stockyards when I was a child were basically the animal pens and mm-hmm. many of the buildings, darlings, and so forth, but fairly dormant. All the pens were empty. And then over the course of time, that's changed into an industrial park. And, the neighborhood has changed. It's just a different community today, same type of community, hardworking family people. Life goes on.
And how many people from the family work there?
Well, Wanda had four siblings. So all five of the children worked in the business. I've worked in the business on the next generation. I have a cousin who's also worked in the business, and I have a sister who's worked in the business as well. So I guess that would be a total of eight of us.
Okay, we're going to take a break here, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to talk about Wanda a little bit more specifically in the next generation. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Świeci miesiąc, świeci, tak, ale nie każdemu, tylko temu łopcu, tylko temu.
Marian Lush. Wanda told me she liked Marian Lush. That's why I played that.
Thanks.
Is that, that's on the jukebox there, right?
It is.
Yeah, yeah. So you guys, Ken and Steve, I want to talk about the next generation. How did you guys find it? There's a lot of... Well, that's my next question. A lot of bars that get a rebirth with another generation. I don't know if that's happening at Stanley's, but how'd you guys find the place?
Well, I found it through, a mutual friend of ours, Joe Brill, who grew up in the neighborhood. And we have a fascination with all kinds of disappearing Chicago, old bars and restaurants that are going away, that you're not going to be able to replace, like Marie's Riptide Lounge and Bucket of Suds and some of these you know, neighborhood bars are just disappearing in Chicago. And Joe and I used to hang out at a bar called Bucket of Suds years ago, and he had mentioned about 5 or 6 years ago, asked if I'd ever been to Stanley's. And he said, Wanda's going to be 90 years old. You know, you should go down there and check it out. And I went down there for the first time for lunch. I got the Polish plate. The food was excellent. Wanda couldn't have been nicer and more friendly. And I just fell in love with the place.
So then you bring Ken?
I brought Ken.
So then Ken, Steve brings you there.
Well, the fact of the matter is I was not the first member of my family to end up in the back of the yards in that neighborhood. I'm originally from southeastern Iowa, just like my dad, my grandfather, everybody, we're all farmers. In 1937, when my father was 19 years old, he came with a load of livestock from southeastern Iowa to the stockyards and wandered through that neighborhood, and he was proud of the fact that he was there for like a day and a half, spent a total of $2.
Yeah.
He actually went up and saw Jim Poole broadcast from the stockyards, and he went to the Stockyards Inn. So years later, Steve, who has always been my entertainment and nightlife guru since I moved to Chicago in the mid-80s, Steve is the man who first took me to the Stay Out All Night discotheque in Stone Park.
Yeah, I was there once or twice.
Performing on a Sunday night was Jeff Garlin.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that was a few years ago. So like Steve said about Joe Brill saying, hey, you've got to come to Stanley's, Steve did the exact same thing with me.
And how long ago was that?
Maybe 5, maybe 6 years ago. The first night that Steve brought me there, my first thought was, I've got to bring my wife Mary here. So the very next night, we loaded up the car, we went to Stanley's. The minute my wife walked in the door, she said, we're having our wedding anniversary, our 20th wedding anniversary party here at this bar. And that was about a year and a half away, and our friends couldn't have been happier. We had a wonderful time there.
Walter and Dominic, describe the vibe there. I know, Dominic, you were there and stuff. I mean, what makes it, why are these guys attracted to it so much? What makes it so unique? Talk about the house drinks, the food. I mean, just create a scene for the listeners.
Walter? Well, I think the one of the unique things of the bar had always been that essentially whatever the food was that was served in the bar was really the same food that my family ate. So there was absolutely no different. So whatever quality of food, you know, we would serve at really a holiday meal or a normal day meal was a typical lunch fare at the bar. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much a casual environment. I would say there were, generally speaking, two distinct groups of customers. Customers that were working men that would stop in for short periods of time, and there were people that were more of the community that would stay longer, such as Ken, and come and visit and that type of thing. And it was just a casual environment. It still is a casual environment. The missing element, of course, is that Wanda would share her free advice with the customers, oftentimes unvarnished advice.
Yeah. She would always ask me if I was keeping busy at work.
Yeah.
She always wanted to know how things were going at my job.
Yeah,
she was. And her tagline saying that she would tell most customers, she'd tell people to behave.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you hit on something, Steve. You mentioned Marie's Riptide. You know, Marie, I think of we've talked about Phyllis's musical, you know, although Phyllis isn't there that much. But these women really had a face of the tavern. I mean, Wanda was Stanley's there, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
She ran the business with her brother, beginning in the late 50s, and then her brother, my Uncle Ted, passed away in 1983. And then at that point forward, the business really transformed into her business, and she was the face of Stanley's. It was really, really, in modern days, more of Wanda's business than it was my grandfather Stanley,
yeah,
no doubt about that.
She was the main attraction.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she lit the place up when she walked out of that back room, out of that kitchen, you know, and everybody said, hey, Wanda, you know. And she would sit down and talk with you for hours, actually, at a time.
Yeah. She would.
My wife and I would go there for lunch, and we would take along my mother-in-law, who is in her mid-80s, and she and Wanda hit it off like long-lost family members. They would sit and talk for hours while we had lunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Music on the jukebox. We heard some of it.
We have a jukebox that is a 1953 Rockola jukebox, 120 records. There's ample supply behind what's on the machine today, and the family bought it new and works today, and We expected to be working tomorrow as well.
Is it 10 cents a song, three for a quarter, and a nice selection of polka music.
Exactly.
And the thing that I really like about Stanley's is there's an old saying in the bar game, and that is if you walk past a bar on the streets and you can't see in the windows, they don't want you to see in the windows. Well, Stanley's, it's such a well-lit room. When you're there in the daytime, it's just there's just a beautiful, warm brown gold glow to it because there are windows that let in the light. It's a warm and inviting atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's not some grubby bar. It's what you want it to be. I've always said that it seems like it wouldn't be that difficult to run a bar. What do you need? You need a room, you need a bar, you need some liquor. Well, it's a lot more complicated than that, but Wanda, Walter, everybody in your family, your grandfather figured it out back in the 20s, and it still works.
No, and let me just comment that I think if my aunt were here today, she would tip her hat to all the other families, probably Chicago families, particularly some of the South Side families, the Schaller family, the right. Schmidt family, mm-hmm. people who have built and maintained saloon businesses, and it's no easy business. You know, a simple matter is you're on your feet all day long, and that food has to be cooked, and the shelves have to be stocked, and it's certainly not an easy thing to do.
Do you guys have any idea? I mean, they always say it was one. I know Schaller's is closed, and that had a very old liquor license. Was it one or two or three? I don't know where the Berghoff sits and all
the
that.
The Berghoff's is one.
Yeah, really. Yeah. But I wouldn't call the Berghoff a slip. But
I'm with you, Dave. Yeah. I'm completely with you on that one.
But do you know how old the liquor license was? Is it Stanley's?
Yeah, I would say that, well, first of all, our first liquor license was 1924. It's a hard thing to measure, but I think it would be fair to say that we're probably one of a handful of Chicago liquor licenses that are still run and maintained by the same original founding family.
Wow.
I think it's fair to say that possibly with the exception of Berghoff on the entire south side of Chicago, we would be the oldest saloon in the city. And as I say, we certainly respect everyone else in this business because anyone who's been in the game for a long, long time has worked very, very hard.
Outside of Joe Brill, have you had any celebrity customers and stuff?
Hey, yeah, Ken Motti, well, the mayor of Rockville, and Steve Mandel drink their regular.
I mean, any politicians come in?
Yeah, we've had a number of politicians, and you know, the mayors have been in.
All the mayors?
Not all, but we've had a couple. And
the Southside mayors.
Yeah, Southside mayors and an alderman. And I think the funniest thing is that we've had so many large and huge and powerful men physically, and everyone to a person would say to Wanda, if you need anything, just give me a call. I'll take care of the problem for you. So we look at that with some admiration.
Yeah.
You know, Stanley's was part of a whole ring of taverns.
Yeah, right.
Down Ashland. It's called
Whiskey Row, yeah.
And at one point, there were over 40 taverns on Ashland Avenue at that location. So it was a tough business to make, you know, to get enough men in to keep it going and things like that. They often cashed checks from the packing houses or from the stockyard company. It was a way stop on a way home. It was also a stop for lunch because a lot of the packing houses originally didn't have cafeterias. So they'd go out and they'd stop at the bars. There'd be a hot plate, not a hot plate, but a steam table, and you'd eat for free if you had a shot and a beer. And Stanley's walked right into that and is the last bar on Whiskey Row.
Yeah, and I would say on the food, probably for the first many years of the business, the food was really a giveaway. The food was just for the convenience of the customers. The customers came in to drink, and my grandmother would make food and put it out free of charge just as a nicety to the customers.
Now, we're going to take a break for the news here in a minute, but people would want to know what's the future. It's open again. It's open.
The business is open. We anticipate being open, and possibly with the exception of Wanda, it's a family business, and the family's no interest in really doing anything but moving forward.
Give the address again.
It's 4258 South Ashland. It's on the northwest corner of 43rd Street and Ashland, right across from the main entrance to the Chicago Stockyards.
And what is it? What are the hours? Did you tell me last call? Was
last
it 7?
Last call, I'm not sure if this is still going to be the case, but last call was around 7:30 p.m.
Yeah, Wanda ran the business from 11 in the morning till 8 in the evening. But those hours may change in days to come.
I'm looking for a side job as a bartender.
Come on down.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. You guys want to hang around a little bit? I want to get a little bit more into Wanda.
Please. And,
okay,
sure.
So we'll be back with more of a tribute to Stanley's on WGN after this.
Oh, that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart. For as rich as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart.
And welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN, and we're paying tribute to Wanda Kurek, who passed away June 18th at the age of 95. Proprietor of Stanley's. She, while we played that song, you told me that was her first rock concert.
Yeah, she saw Frank Sinatra live when she was a teenager.
And that was her first rock concert.
It was.
She missed a lot. Did she? I asked her once if she saw the Beatles at the International Amphitheater. I don't think that was up her alley.
The Beatles were not quite her style.
Yeah. talk about, people may not know about her background in fashion. She graduated the Vogue School of Fashion, and I didn't know this till last week. She wants to own over 100 McCall's dress patterns. So right, talk about that. That's where her sense of style came from, right?
Yeah, her passion really was dressmaking, dress design. She graduated high school in the height of World War II, and that would have been 1942, and began the Vogue Chicago School of Fashion, but then quickly ended that simply because she was called back to work in the family business since her brothers were in the war. And then in the 50s, she purchased the dress shop on 75th and Loomis and had a small dress shop for 3 or 4 years, and then would call back from that because, again, her father took ill, and she went back into the bar business. But that was really her passion. She made many outfits, designed many clothes. She was really fantastic with it.
Yeah. I'm guessing that's why Wanda liked me and could tolerate me, because I would always show up. I tend to wear a shirt and necktie no matter what I do.
You're dressed up here.
Well, like Steve said, I'm dressed for radio.
Yeah, right.
My heroes in fashion were Commissioner Gordon on the Batman TV series and Eddie Albert on Green Acres. Yeah. I said, that's how you do it. That's how you put on your stump grubbing suit.
So you would come to the bar dressed up?
Yeah. I would come there straight from work. I work in the western suburbs, and I found out that at like 2:30 in the afternoon on a Thursday, I could make it from the western suburbs to Stanley's in 45 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I would jam, and I would get there, and Wanda was always, she was happy to see every person that walked into that bar. She really was, and she made you feel so welcome, and just seeing her little head peeking up over the bar, because she was a small woman.
Very short, yes.
Very small, but she filled that room with her personality.
You told me you always felt like you belonged. That was a common theme there.
I really did. Being, like I said, coming to Chicago from southeastern Iowa and being a farm kid, you always kind of have a chip on your shoulder about, oh, here I am in the big town. But it was like finally coming to Stanley's with my wife, with my friend Steve, I really, really, after all these years living in Chicago, I felt like I belong here.
Yeah.
My wife and I, the very first funeral that we ever attended for one of the barkeepers that we ever went to was Paul Fong, who was owner-operator of Chef Shangri-La in North Riverside. We went to his visitation because my in-laws were personal friends with Paul and his wife, Susie. So when Wanda passed away and I got a personal text from Rich, one of the bartenders there, that was just it. And then going to the visitation, I felt like, yeah, this was a very special woman. She was a very, very special person, a cornerstone of Chicago.
Dominic, when people went there and talked to Wanda, and you're a historian, what's lost when this oral history goes away?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. Some of us try to preserve that oral history, right. But a lot of it's lost. Wanda was a character. Chicago used to be a city of characters. There was a lot of people who were, you know, a little on edge or a little off edge or a little roundabout. And Wanda was one of those people. And she was fantastic. Her heart was just, you know, open to everybody. She was a great person. But she was a character. And she drew people into that bar. I mean, she drew me in. You know, my family grew up around the corner from there.
Uh-huh.
And Knew a lot of the same people and went to the same church when I was younger, before it closed, Sacred Heart. And people were just drawn to that place.
Yeah.
It was a good, respectable bar on Whiskey Row.
Whiskey Row, right.
Wanda really liked when Dominic came in because they were able to talk about the neighborhood. They both knew the same families. But what was really unique is that virtually everyone Dominic knew, Wanda knew that person's grandparents or parents. And
right.
You talk about Whiskey Row. How many women had a face on Whiskey Row? I mean, was this rare that Wanda was?
I think it was not as rare as you might think. There were several bars close by that were run by women. Maybe in the early days it was mostly a male institution. Let's see, before World War One, World War Two, but it changed over time. You know, Whiskey Row was one of those places. People in the neighborhood, there were two kinds of taverns in back of the yards. There were the taverns on Whiskey Row, which anybody could go to, black, white, Hispanic, whatever. And you'll see the same mix today at Stanley's. Then there were the bars on the inside of the community. There were about three bars per block in back of the yards. I think on my block there were five. So that's a lot of bars per block. But those places were more closed off. It was a Lithuanian bar. You didn't go in if you were Polish. If you were German, you didn't go into a Polish bar. You know, these were very, but not on Whiskey Row. Whiskey Row was open to everybody.
We've always had an eclectic mix of customers. Yeah. Proud to say that we still do.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, Wanda embraced diversity in the sense that when she rolled up her wet towel and snapped it in your face, you know, you knew it was time to leave, whatever planet you were born on.
And every time I go to the bar, I end up having a conversation with someone at the bar that I would not have met otherwise at any other place in my life. They say that in your life you have your home, your job, and then you need that third place.
Third place, yeah.
And
yeah,
third place. Stanley's is absolutely third place. I have met one of my favorite people that I met there was a man who had a degree from an Ivy League school out east, and he was working here for one of the recycling companies, not as an executive, as a guy on the truck.
Yeah.
There's a story right there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's always been an interesting place, and Wanda would talk to me in Polish too, which was kind of fun for both of us. And but you're right about that clot. She could hit you with it. I remember somebody saying, Wanda, you know, I don't like liver. She said, go to the There's the door. Around the corner is McDonald's. Go eat there. I mean, she told it like it was.
She did.
And credit where credit is due to Dominic. You appear in a documentary about the Polish in Chicago, and you were interviewed sitting at the bar at Stanley's.
Actually, the documentary, a couple of documentaries I've been in, the documentary you're talking about was called The South Side. And that's with Jeffrey Barron. He brought me in there 5-6 years ago, we sat there and talked with Wanda, et cetera. It was great fun. Now, I had known Wanda before, but it was at that point that I started coming in regular into the bar.
Okay, in the time we have left, I want to go around the table and talk about your projects outside of going to Stanley's. So, you got a book coming out, Dominic?
Yeah, I do. In the fall, it's called American Warsaw, The Rise, Fall, and Rebirth of Polish Chicago. It's University of Chicago Press.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you'll be busy, right?
We're busy. The business is open, and we're looking forward to welcome back all of our friends from over the years.
Are you going to make any changes? You wouldn't tell me if you are.
we're trying to improve our parking situation,
which
is a little tight. But other than that, I think the same room will be the same.
I kind of lost track there. What time is last call?
Well, it was 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
We're open a little later now, but that's all now in the process of being redefined in a sense.
Okay. All right. Ken Motti.
Oh, I'm the busiest man in pretend show business.
Gin Palace Jesters.
I play in a traditional and original country and western band called the Gin Palace Jesters. You can find us on Facebook, Gin-Palace-Jesters. And I'm also involved in a show that can be seen on YouTube that's called the Chicago Vintage Show that is sort of like the Tonight Show, but with all rockabilly and tattoo stuff and vintage and swing dance stuff. And I get to play Johnny Carson. It's the most fun I've had in my show business career, and I am making air quotes with my fingers.
Okay. Steve Mandel, what are you up to?
I'm going to continue exploring, looking for lots of gems in places like Stanley's across the city and help spread the word.
What do you, last question, what do you learn when you go to these places, the sense of history? I mean, that's real important to you.
Yeah, I, you know, because I just love. I don't like where we're heading. I don't like the music. You know, every I sound old, but
you kids with your live music
and you are old.
I just not a fan of what's going on now, and I like this old history, and I like talking to these people. Mm-hmm. Joe Dano, who owned Bucket of Suds, if he were alive today, he'd be 103 years old. Mm-hmm. And just learned so much history from him about the city and how things were.
You know what? They have time for you.
I used to.
Right, that's they right. And one of the things that I noticed about whether it was Marie or Wanda or Joe Dano is that none of these people wanted to just stay at home and sit and watch TV. Being around all these people coming in, and especially younger people, all these people could have been my grandparents, and they enjoyed talking mm-hmm. with people. And I think if they didn't have that every day and just sat in a chair, they probably wouldn't have lived as long as they did. And I think it, not necessarily the bar business itself, but just talking with people and being around and sharing their knowledge, that there were people that wanted to.
Wanda once told me, she said, "What am I going to do, sit and look at the park? I want to talk to people."
I used to say to Wanda, "I wasted the first 52 years of my life not coming to Stanley's. I'm making up for lost time."
Good for you. Well, thank you so much. It's a great place. Shout out the address again, Wally.
4258 South Ashland Avenue, Chicago. Thanks so much, Dave.
And you'll still have Bear games on Sunday.
We'll have it all.
She loved that. All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more Nocturnal Journal after this.